Jam! Hello again and welcome back to another fun-filled episode of Monday Night Magic here on the MTGcast Network. This is episode 607 of M&M, and I am Chewy.
Hi, Chewy.
Hi, Squee. That's Squee.
Return to Squee. Return to Squee.
Didn't we? No, we just did that.
Yeah, I know. That's why we're doing it again.
Oh,
that's
right.
What we do now.
And then Clues is not with us this week because reasons. I think he said that he and the wife went on a camping trip and they got back today and they've been unable to be a functional human being since then, I think is what he said.
I mean, if you spend too much time outside, eventually you become outside and you've got to recover from that.
Yeah, that's true. Also, there are bears outside. Just leaving that out there.
Why would you go out there? I mean, they're tutus, but they kill all the printings of me, so nah.
Buh. So, so I guess we should cover announcement day first, huh?
That does seem to be the most important thing, given all the hype they put into it.
That immediately went... But that might just be me. So, yes, announcement day was Friday, as we warned you last week. That means there was going to be a lot of stuff for us to talk about this week. Except not... as much as I expected, honestly.
Yeah, like, it's more like there was an announcement, and here's some more stuff on things you know about.
Yeah. So, the big announcement, as I'm sure everyone knows by now, is the fall set will be Guilds of Ravnica. That's right, it's the return to Ravnica.
Not to be confused with Guild Pact or Ravnica City of Guilds.
Correct. So that's the October set. The January set, first set next year, is Ravnica Allegiance. Yep. Back to Ravnica. Yeah. And they're still being a slave to the one set has these guilds and one set has those guilds.
Though they did change up Witcher and Witch.
Very slightly.
Yeah.
This is almost what it was in the original Ravnica.
So they moved two of them around for each one.
Well, original Ravnica was three sets.
Too, oh, right. So, you mean yeah. Originally. Yeah, you're right.
But yeah, we've got Guilds of Ravnica, Selesnya, Boros, Golgari, Izzet, Dimir.
Yeah.
So that's green, white, red, white, black, green, blue, red, blue, black. In case you don't know what those words mean.
Yeah.
Which is understandable. And then Ravnica Allegiance is the other. So Azorius is white, blue. Rakdos is black-red, Gruul is red-green, Simic is green-blue, and then Orzhov is white-black. And the problem is, they're not done yet.
No.
Let's
take a moment to think about the fact that the last time we returned to Ravnica, they did a big set with five guilds.
Yep.
And then they did a big set with five guilds that were drafted separately. Like, they were effectively the way that we make blocks work now.
Yep.
If blocks is even an appropriate word anymore, which it's not.
It's not.
And then you got Dragon's Maze, which was a mess.
It was kind of lame.
They had just done two sets that were designed clearly to function within themselves, and then they tried to squeeze 10 combinations of two colors into one smaller set. And while we don't do small sets anymore, squeezing 10 combinations of colors into one set is still hard. So... clearly, we should do it again.
It would not surprise me if the reason that they haven't told us about the third set is because they're getting rid of the whole guild thing.
I suspect they have to.
And they can't name it that. Or they can't tell us the name because that would be the big giveaway.
Well, yeah, because the next set's going to be Magic the Gathering. Jace had one job. And it's going to fall apart because the Guild Pact went and lost his mind and became a pirate. Like... yeah. I don't know. Like, going to Ravnica is sort of weird because aside from the fact that we recently, in the grand scheme of the game, did Ravnica, it's also strange that you're hitting the nostalgia for the favorite setting right after you just did the nostalgia for the original setting. And so it's like it's going to be 12 months of super nostalgia followed by whatever comes after this. Hopefully a new set in a new location. Most likely a core set. So it's just sort of weird to me that they're doing this back to back. Like, I'm sure somewhere in the world of branding, it's like, this is going to be awesome for the 25th anniversary. We go to the two most popular planes, but Ravnica is hard. Going off of the two color system is great, but you can't do it too often. And last time they did this, they had trouble with some of the guilds being balanced against the rest of them. So we'll see how well they do it this go around with the lessons learned. Hopefully this means that we aren't going to run into another time where Izzet and Dimir don't work as well as the rest of them, because they're in the same set. So as much as Warclue's here, he would be cheering for the fact that this is clearly slanting things in Boris's favor. I'm hoping they've gotten better at balancing these things.
Yeah.
We'll see when we get there.
So I had a nice long Twitter rant about this the day on announcement day itself, because like when I read this, I had two reactions. The first one was, why do I have to watch this terrible video? Because no offense to Megan and Maria, but that video was awful. Like, it was just awful. Like, it was horribly, blatantly, obviously scripted, and they're trying to make it seem all not scripted.
It was, I think when Chewie and I were talking about it before, I used the phrase, feels like a morning talk show, because everyone is obviously going off a list of bullets and trying to drop them into casual conversation, but it's always obvious when you're doing that. And like, I don't think anyone involved in this was doing anything wrong from a presentation perspective. I just think that approach doesn't work. Your audience knows what you're doing, and, you know, you might as well turn and wink at the camera like Jimmy Fallon if you're going to do that. Like, it just doesn't come across as natural.
Yeah.
You can totally just talk to us like it's a normal announcement and try to get us hyped like a news announcer rather than like super casual. Gee, I wonder what's going to happen. I hope it's this set. That's my favorite set. Proceeds to produce a lot of information that you obviously were thinking about this being the set before they told you. But yeah. Either way, having to watch the video was a little bit rough. Like, I'm glad that we've got cool stuff happening, and I'm glad a lot of people are going to be excited about it. I just, as someone who works with media and in marketing, I'm like, that's not the best way to do it. But then again, I remember their best announcements ever, like when we had Kozilek destroy the Wizards website. That was just fun.
That was pretty good.
They've done lots of cool gimmicks like these things before. So it feels kind of like a letdown by comparison, but normally they announce things like this at PAX or at a Pro Tour or something else where they had more control and all that. Here they just posted it on their website on a Friday, and it wasn't as exciting.
Well, so. And it's not that the video existed that bothered me. It's that to get all the information, you had to watch the damn video. Because underneath it was just, hey, Guilds of Ravnica, list of guilds. Ravnica Allegiance, list of guilds. Cool.
Yeah.
Also, this was the first thing I saw when I woke up.
Oh, well, that probably doesn't help.
And that
I saw it later in the day when I already knew it was Ravnica, so I didn't even have that plot twist waiting for me.
But so that was the reaction to how the information was presented to us. But then the reaction was, oh, we're going back to Ravnica for a full year.
I would actually be much happier if we just did two sets. And I'm a little bit nervous. Like, one of the main advantages of the way that we're doing things now is that you don't have to stick around long enough for something to feel tired. Like, I shouldn't be like, oh, thank God we're leaving Ravnica. I'm tired of this. And I'm worried that's where we're going to be. But
yeah, I'm also worried that the first two sets are just going to be, look at all this cool guild stuff. And then nothing's going to happen story-wise until the third set.
I mean, it does say in the description here that it'll lead up to the penultimate event. And it's like, so you're saying that the end of the second set will be the moment where things happen? Because that's not great. In the grand scheme of Magic storytelling, it's already a slow-moving process, especially with the, you know, the updates popping up week to week in the story. But typically, the pacing in Magic things, you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, is you spend a set introducing a world or a setting or what's going on in it, then you spend a set breaking it, and then you spend a set showing what's left. But due to the guild structure, they have to spend two sets showing you what's going on with the guild, because they're not going to cross-pollinate guild cards into other sets. So you're going to spend half a year showing what's going on, then you're going to break something. So presumably, they'll be like, hey, look, it's Ravnica, it's awesome, and then something's going to happen to it. I don't know if Nicol Bolas is going to pop out and be like, it's me, and then fight Nimizzet. Actually, that'd be pretty cool. But aside from like awesome dragon fights, I don't know what they're gonna do.
They should fight in baby oil.
I mean, Niv-Miz would probably be okay with that. If he thinks there's an advantage.
He probably would. But so I think there are
flaming baby oil.
Is that even possible? No. I think there are several factors that might have gone into why we go from like we have Dominaria as the first of the standalone, you know, no more blocks. And then we have a full year of Ravnica. And I honestly believe that part of that is gonna be because the world building teams just can't build three worlds that fast.
Mm-hmm.
So since Ravnica is pretty much built,
yeah,
I'm hoping that like the world building teams are off doing other things and getting us ready for like the next two or so years, you know, getting ahead.
Yeah. I mean, admittedly, we're going to be fair. We did just get a string of new sets. Like we had Kaladesh, then we had Amonkhet, and then we had Ixalan. So this isn't me saying, oh God, we're always going back to the same place, because we're not.
No. And like, this is right in line with when the first two, like the first Ravnica happened, and then the second one was some number of years later. And then this is that many number of years later again.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember when the first two came out, but
yeah,
hang on. Ravnica release date. Ravnica was 05. Return to Ravnica release date was 2012.
Yeah. So this will be running into 2019.
Yeah, so like it's not like, oh my God, we're going back already. No, that's good. Like, and a lot of people are bummed that the big return to Dominaria, you know, Magic going back home, only gets one set. But then Ravnica, that we've, you know, already been back to once, gets a full three, and eh.
Yeah. I don't know, I'm kind of glad that Dominaria only gets one, because it means they did a really great set.
Yeah.
I'm a little worried that we're going to get two great sets here and then another Dragon's Maze, but that's just skepticism based on the last time we did this.
Yeah.
And that's not entirely fair considering they've got plenty of time and they've presumably learned a lot. That said, I also remember that when we first returned to Ravnica, there was a massive shortage of Return to Ravnica cards because everyone wanted them and the power levels were pushed. So don't be surprised if this is part of that adventure again, when they bust out the shocks or something and prices go up and everybody goes nuts. I'm actually hoping they don't put the shock lands in them this time.
I am also hoping that, but only because I really want to watch all the Ravnica like fanboys cry because they're not there. That's really the only reason, because I don't care about value or availability of them. That doesn't affect me at all. So
I just think that they always run a fine line when they return to settings, because it's like, are you going to reprint all these cards that we liked before? And it's like, no, I want you to make new good cards. I want you to make new exciting cards. This is the set where you get to do all the cool gold stuff with color pairs. Like, don't just go down the reprint list if you can avoid it.
Yeah.
Which
they avoided it with Return, so.
Yes. And I'm hoping they will continue to do so.
Yeah.
Like, most likely what we'll get out of this are updated legends for popular characters like they did last time.
Mm-hmm.
And you might also get like more champion type characters who are not like the guild leaders, but are really important. We'll probably get some of those, like especially now that everything is focusing on, you know, feeding cards into Commander and other things. That's fine. I wouldn't be surprised if some of the fan favorite characters that are still around, like we don't know how much time has passed by the time we go back, but everything seems to just be playing out normally now because they have planeswalkers that have presumably normal lifespans just jumping between. So considering it's only been 7 years in real life, it's probably been close to that in game or in the setting. So I don't think they're just going to be like, and here are all the guild leaders again with different mechanics. I think that they'll probably focus somewhere else.
I mean, it could even be less time since then. It's not like Magic sets really work in real time.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if this was literally like 2 years later and we just come back and we find out that without Jace, the Living Guild Pact, being there doing his job, they've realized they don't actually need that nonsense and just continue on as normal. Because that would actually be like the ultimate nice thing if it turned out the Guild Pact was irrelevant because they figured out that they can't fight each other. But then you remember Rakdos and like Golgari and Gruul are there and it's like, no, that's not how that works. This is a setting that has, you know, four guilds with red and four guilds with black and one of them that's red and black. There's no way they're going to be peaceful. Should be fine though. But either way, like, that's really all we know right now. We know which sets are there, what years are coming out, and which guilds are in each one. And also this little note down here that they're going to be doing guild kits, which are 60-card decks flavored after your favorite guild, plus some pens and stickers and spin-down life counters, which sounds, again, like they found another way to repackage pre-constructed decks. There are going to be five of them each one. It's going to be kind of like what they always did before, but
yeah,
maybe they'll surprise us. I don't know. I don't really care that they rename these things all the time. I understand the function they have, but it's a little confusing to me from a brand perspective. Yeah. But hey, at least we don't get those pre-release boxes now, because that sucked.
Do we not? Do we know that?
I mean, they didn't say they're doing them, so I'm going to right now, until I hear otherwise, assume that we are not.
Because those pre-release boxes
sucked. Oh, not a safe one, but it's the one that I'm making, and I'm calling it an assumption.
Fair enough.
We'll find out later if that's not the case, but I really hated signing up for guilds, so let's hope we don't have to do that. We'll see.
Now, I do want to reiterate, I said this on Twitter. I'm not worried that the new Ravnica sets will suck. Like, I'm not like, oh my god, watch, he's going to screw it up. And
they don't screw up Ravnica.
Yeah, they don't screw up Ravnica, except for Dragon's Maze. And I don't honestly know where this reaction was coming from. But like I said, my initial reaction of another year of Ravnica was, and that was just honest snap reaction. It could be, and I said this on Twitter, I've already done it twice, so I don't care.
Yeah.
Which is horribly elitist of me, and it's not fair to the newer players who maybe only went to Ravnica once or haven't at all.
Yeah.
So that's fine. It could be that I'm just old and grumpy. it could be that, like, I don't know, I was expecting something awesome, and instead I got Ravnica again, which wasn't, in my brain, awesome. So I don't know. But I'm sure it'll be awesome.
Yeah.
And really well done, because I trust WotC to not screw up Ravnica. So I just thought I'd share what my honest reaction was, and it was an audible groan and an eye roll. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, whereas for me, my honest reaction to it is, okay. Like, it's not hype or anti-hype, it's just, would prefer we only do two. I want to see what they're going to do that's going to justify a third, if they can. Past that, my only real expectations to come out of this are probably pushed cards that are going to be on the same power level as Dominaria, which means we're probably going to see new cards dominating Standard and probably pushing out most of the cards from last year pretty hard. Like, when these come in, there's going to be rotation, obviously, but I don't really expect the Ixalan cards to stand much of a chance against a gold set on the power level pushing that they're likely to do again. This is just what Ravnica does. It just squeezes out the sets around it because it's really good. And finally, I expect that they'll come back and make an Amara Tandris that is not a giant, because that was embarrassing last time. So for those that don't know, they had to swap around a mythic and a legendary to fill in a cycle, which meant this awesome, flavorful, cool card that became amazing couldn't be the guild champion that it was supposed to be. So you instead get a 5/7 elf shaman who prevents damage to creature tokens, as opposed to the legendary summoner of an elemental who summons the elemental when she, you know, does whatever it was she did, dies or something. Like, it was a very clear swapping, but it was really funny because it meant you had this 5/7 giant elf. I suspect they'll do a better job this time. Thanks, Dragon's Maze.
Let's hope so.
Yeah. But that's enough dogging on that. There were other things in the announcement.
Yeah, so we also have, you remember the, what's it called? Oh, it's just called Global Series. Okay.
No.
I thought it had, it is, it's Global Series, Jiang Yanggu and Mu Yanling.
Yes.
That, for some reason I thought it had a different name. So, okay. So this first Global Series, they revealed the two Planeswalkers, and they had a strange announcement to go with it. And that's that the two Planeswalkers will be legal in Standard in China only.
And not Standard legal anywhere else. That's questionable.
Now, I understand the reasoning for that is trying to, you know, tap the market. That's cool. And they're also not terribly powerful. They're on the same level as, like, Planeswalker decks.
Yes.
Well, I mean, they are Planeswalker decks.
Yeah.
So these are like the same power level as the B team planeswalkers that we get in planeswalker decks now.
The ones that typically cost two more colorless mana or two more generic mana than they normally would and therefore are not that competitive.
Yeah, and none of their abilities are insane or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an interesting decision, but I see where they're coming from a business standpoint, so that's cool.
Yeah, one of the things that's entertaining about it is that they will be legal in Legacy and Vintage. So while I don't ever see them seeing play there, in the event they ever make a Global Series Planeswalker that's actually competitive in Legacy, they're going to have a giant mess. But that's a problem to deal with if it happens. And I suspect fear of that will prevent these from ever being all that good. But they're neat. They look neat.
Yeah, they look neat. That argument that you just made is actually going to be mentioned again in a second.
Yeah.
So, hey, why don't we dive into that?
Hooray.
You remember the Firesong and Sunspeaker exclusive buy a box pre-order?
Clues will never let me forget.
Yeah, so that will continue until morale improves. I mean, they're going to keep doing that. What did it say? For the foreseeable future, with each major set release for the foreseeable future. And of course, all of the blowback on this seems to be rooted in the, but what if it becomes standard playable? Like, nobody seems terribly upset about it as is, but they're like, this is going to be awful if it's standard playable and no one can get a hold of it.
Yeah, I think all of this is floating around memories of when True Name Nemesis was printed. Yeah. And the fact that that completely screwed up for those of you who aren't familiar with it, True Name Nemesis, you hear us mention it in Legacy all the time because it's a great merfolk that beats face and is really hard to deal with. It was printed in a commander set. And as such, that was the only way you could get it. So you'd spend your $30 on the commander set to get one copy of it. Playing it in Legacy, sure, you'll throw down, you know, $120 to get four of this commander set to get four of your Legacy staples. Like, that's almost a bargain the way Legacy works. Means the rest of us can't get that set. The rest of us who actually want to play Commander with it are going to have a hard time getting it because they don't have the print levels to support that kind of purchasing of one of the five. And the fear since then has always been, what if in one of these limited, you know, print run things, a sufficiently powerful card that becomes a four of in a relevant format comes out? And to credit, since then, the only things that have been like that have been like a conspiracy card or a commander card that you only need one or two of because it's a sideboard thing or something. But when it comes to these things, yeah, these are things that are a concern because once all the, you know, buy a boxes happen and the pre-ordering has happened, they don't release more. And it also feels kind of bad to pre-order a booster box to get a card and that's the only way you can get it. Because not everyone's going to throw down, you know, between $80 and $140 to get one of these. Because you buy a box online, you can get one for like $80 usually. You buy it in a store, you're probably paying a lot more than that. Especially if you're in an area where they just make you buy them at the $4.29 a pack MSRP. Like, then you're looking at spending $130, $140 or whatever the math is to get it. A single copy of this card in addition to the box. That's just miserable. But
not to mention, some stores are going to jack up the price to ensure that you get a buy a box promo.
Yeah. This is one of those things that they're doing to try to help stores, and I get it. But
yeah,
again, this is probably not the best way to do it.
I'm just concerned. Like, they look at the amount of products sold for Dominaria and they go, dude, Firesong and Sunspeaker is working. Let's keep doing that. When, I don't really know if that one card was why so many people were buying boxes. Because Dominaria was just really good.
Well, this is one of those things they're going to do for a year to see what happens. Because you need more than one set as a sample size. Yeah. Unfortunately, we're going into Ravnica, so crap. People are going to buy Ravnica the same way they're buying Dominaria. So, I don't know. But
so they're apparently going to
keep doing this. So.
Just for comparison, that True Name Nemesis, which has only been printed in Commander 2013, which is only playable in Legacy in like a deck, maybe two, is $32-ish. Between, like, $27 and $32, roughly.
Yeah.
On the secondary market. And again, that's only Legacy and only in a small number of decks.
Yeah.
So and if one of these limited print run things became standard playable, it would be a giant mess. But hopefully Wizards won't do that. But that seems to be the only, the main thing that people are really truly complaining about is what if.
Yeah. And I personally have faith that Wizards is not going to make that mistake with these cards because they've been printing these intro pack Planeswalkers for a little bit now, and none of them have been vaguely competitive.
Yeah.
Like, we speculated about one of them once, largely as a thought experiment, but it's really easy to make a Planeswalker not good enough.
It is. Just ask Tibble.
Yeah.
Firesong and Sunspeaker, on the other hand, on TCG, is like $7, $8, $9 in there somewhere.
Now, admittedly, the other fear for these is if they continue to do cool legendary creatures, then the commander crowd has a harder time getting it because they might not necessarily want to buy a pre-order booster box for standard if they don't play standard.
True.
But then, that's why we trade and buy cards. So,
yeah, but like, then that's why I say Firesong and Sunspeaker is like $10 max right now. So
mm-hmm.
I'm sure it'll be fine.
If you're truly worried, you can find and buy these cards. If anything, it's something to trade with the kid who bought a giant box and wants something relevant for standard. You just buy the card for standard and trade it to him. Like, whatever. There are ways to make this work. But it is an understandable fear. I don't think it's going to come to pass in that worst case scenario.
Yeah. I think we'll be all right.
Yeah. And if it comes out and it's a problem, people will complain, as they do. Yeah. And WotC will probably cave, as they do.
As they do. Also, the pre-release pickup is going to keep happening. So if you pre-order a box, you can pick it up during the pre-release. The only thing that I don't like about that is apparently, was it Clues? Yeah, Clues had a family emergency and didn't go to the pre-release because he was out of town. But when he went like 2 days after the pre-release, they wouldn't let him have it. Even though they had the box,
yeah.
He was there, they wouldn't let him have it because the Wizards Play Network was like, no, you can only give them out at the pre-release, which is really stupid.
Yeah,
like, I understand
like
you want to get butts in the store for the pre-release, but eh.
I'm honestly waiting for us to reach the point where they just don't pre-release. I mean, pre-release is a big thing and it's a lot of fun, but it feels like we're in a slow march there since like Magic Online gets it immediately, and they've already gotten rid of what was once the release party or the launch party or all the other things that we had. Like, those all went away. The regional pre-release has just turned into go to your store. And
isn't that what draft weekend is now? Is that what the launch party and the release thing and all turned into? Was that
the first Friday Night Magic draft that you do is the one that gets you the cool promo card? Mm. Like, it's just a special F&M. Unless that changed while I was at making it. I haven't been to F&M in a while, admittedly.
Because they've changed it so many times, I don't remember what that's called.
Yeah, it's just for history for people that don't know. At least when I started playing, which again is not the beginning of the game, but when I started, you would go to a regional pre-release, like each state got like one or something like that. Like, you know, there's just like the one, you'd travel for it, you'd go and play there. It'd be a lot bigger, at least in our case, there were multiple flights running throughout the day. Kind of like if you were doing side events at a GP or something. And then a little bit later, not necessarily a week, right? Like sometimes it was longer or shorter, but might have just always been a week. After that, you go to your store and you do the launch party. And that was the first time that you could actually buy the product. And it was its own sealed tournament. And that was a big deal thing for that weekend.
Yeah. And then eventually pre-releases became what we know now. There were local store events. And so was the launch. And at least around here, pre-releases were huge. And launches sometimes didn't even fire.
Yeah, a lot of you just show up at the launch, buy your stuff, and leave. Because you have other stuff to do, and it's a Friday night. And if you pre-ordered
stuff... Well, no, they were on the weekends back then, so they were like Saturday. It was the pre-release again, essentially.
Right, you're right. Yeah.
Nobody...
It was Saturday.
like Mike would go to the store here in Kernersville and just nothing. And sometimes he would go to Lucky's and just nothing because it's not the pre-release. And now this stuff is legal, so we don't care to play sealed anymore. And eventually Wizards was like, okay, we'll stop doing that.
Yeah. Yeah, like your main reason for doing it was to get the promo card, which was typically not that exciting. Like your pre-release card would be a cool rare thing. Your launch party card would be an uncommon. Like it just wasn't that exciting.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's history. And so here's the weirdness that we're doing now.
So yeah. So there you go. Pre-release pickup and the buy a box promos are totally going to be, keep being a thing, the unique buy a box promos, you know.
Yeah.
So, all right. And, what?
Oh, and like, and yeah, don't be surprised if a few years down the road, if this isn't working, they stop and then they put a bunch of these originally exclusive cards and like from the vault, my bad, or whatever.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see them in some sort of like master set.
Yeah, I could totally see that.
Or a plane chase, some other supplemental product thing in the future, mm-hmm. like without a doubt.
Yeah, I could see that happening.
Let's see here.
Or they actually reprint them in a real set. Like they've done stuff like that before too. We'll see.
I don't know about that one.
Well, I'm mostly thinking about when they renamed the Cheese Stands Alone into Baron Glory. And printed it in a real set. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if they made equivalents of these cards in real sets later if this became a big enough issue.
Oh, okay.
Like, none of them use unique mechanics based on the one we've seen. So, you know, sample size and all that. But yeah. That'll be the future.
Moving on. Enough wondering about the future. The MTR, the Magic Tournament Rules update happened. Nothing important here. I thought this had already happened.
Yeah.
But apparently this is another one that tweaks some things, but whatever, links in the show notes if you care.
Yeah, a lot of it is just enabling the things we were just talking about.
Yeah.
So.
And then we go, is that, that's everything, right? Yeah, then we get to Battle Bond. The other part of Announcement Day was revealing two cards from Battle Bond with a new ability, which is Partner With.
Yep. Not to be confused with Bandy.
Or Partner.
Or Partner, yes.
Although it does work that way too. It's very strange. So let's just read the damn cards. So I'll read the first one. You can read the second one. So
okay.
Peer. I'm guessing P-I-R is peer. I kind of doubt it.
I would assume.
Per. But peer, imaginative rascal. For two and a green is a 1/1 legendary human. It has the ability Partner With Toothy Imaginary Friend. What that means is, when this creature enters the battlefield, so when Peer enters the battlefield, target player may put Toothy into their hand from their library, then shuffle. It's a normal, you know, search your library and shuffle, they just abridge the reminder text. So, target player can search their library for Toothy and put it in their hand. Makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Because Battle Bond remembers to add a giant centric.
Mm-hmm.
So you can target yourself if it's in your deck, or you can target your partner if it's in their deck.
Yay.
And then Peer, what else does Peer say? If one or more counters would be put on a permanent your team controls, your team, to hit a giant, that many plus one of each of those counters are put on that permanent instead. So in other words, anytime you add counters, add one extra. Nice and simple.
Yeah. X plus one. Hooray. So... let's talk about Toothy, the imaginary friend. Toothy, imaginary friend, costs 3 and a blue for a 1/1 legendary creature illusion. That sucks. Wait, there's more. Partner with Peer, imaginative rascal. Like before, when this creature enters the battlefield, target player may put Peer into their hand from their library, then shuffle. So, like the other one, go find, you know, its partner. Get it? The name.
Works both ways. That's nice.
That's how partnerships should work.
Yeah.
But also, whenever you draw a card, put a plus one counter on Toothy Imaginary Friend. When Toothy leaves the battlefield, draw a card for each plus one counter on it. See, there's a plus one counter synergy between the two of these cards. It makes sense. But yeah, it's like Toothy is kind of interesting from the standpoint of, I look at this picture and I'm like, why aren't you an Atog? But.
Because he's imaginary, duh.
Atogs can be imaginary.
No.
Don't limit them.
No.
They can do what they want. It's an illusion. But I think this is Peer not being imaginative enough. But either way. so yeah, here are two cards that obviously play off of one another. If they're both in your deck, great. They can dig each other out. If you and your partner each have one, hence the theme. Teammate. You and your teammate each have one. You can go dig them out. So that's awesome. But there's some more gimmicks to this.
Yeah, so another thing that it says here in the announcement day thing is if you open up one of a pair from that has partner with, you will always have the other one in the same pack. There are 11 pairs in the set, and they're all uncommon or higher. So anytime... Oh, and when one shows up, they take the place of an uncommon. Oh, that's neat.
Which is good, because both of these are rares.
Yeah, so if Pier is your rare, then Toothy will be in an uncommon slot.
Yeah.
So that's nice. And it points out that in Two-Headed Giant Draft, since you and your teammate pick two cards at a time, you can always take the partners.
Makes sense. You should probably take the partner.
You probably.
Otherwise, what are you even doing with your life? But...
Now, when it comes to Commander, excuse me, these things work the same as other commanders that have partner, except they can only partner with each other. That's not in this article, that's in a different one. Oh, no, that is in this article.
Hooray.
So, yeah, you can't put Toothy with, you know, Flask whatever thing. You know, the goblin that everyone loves. The break that has partner. I didn't buy any of that commander set, so I don't know any of these names.
Oh, right.
The one
I didn't
buy
that one either.
The one who got the weird rewording with the targeting rules change.
Yeah.
Crap.
Was it the Vile Smasher?
That's the one. Vile Smasher, not Flask.
I don't remember her name.
I think it's Vile Smasher, yeah.
Oh, it actually just said, okay, cool. Vile Smasher the Fierce.
Yeah. Yeah, there we go, yeah. So you can't put, like, Toothy with Vile Smasher, because Toothy has partner with Pier. So it's either, if you're playing these two, then they're your commander pair.
Yep. So that's neat. Yeah. This is a, you know, different way to roll with it. One thing that I will note is that if these are always going to be in packs together, it means we might be opening ourselves up to some funny collation things. So.
Oh, God.
Yeah. We'll see where that goes. There may be unintentional previews.
Comedy.
Also, I wonder if you get both of them in foil if you get a foil. That'll be an interesting thing to figure out.
Oh, wow.
Because if one of them was a foil, then they're not in the rare slot. So.
So I wonder if you could get Toothy and Pier in a pack with a foiled Toothy.
Yeah, I don't know. Huh. I guess we'll figure that out as we go. It'd be actually really neat if you were to open a pack with two foils in it. But I doubt that's a thing. We'll see.
We'll see. So there's a lot more about Battle Bond here. I mean, like a lot more. Like, Gavin's article from today is massive.
Yeah, you can tell that this has been his project for a while, and he finally gets to talk about it, and so he's excited.
I mean, it's...
Which is cool.
Yeah, but that means I didn't read it.
Well, like I'll tell you that if you scroll to the bottom of one of them, you get more of Pierce cards. So that's fun.
I think this is the thing we forgot to mention by now. They showed us the dual lands that are going to be in Battle Bond, and I think they're really neat. So they're allied colored, and like the white-blue one is called Sea of Clouds. It taps for a white or a blue. And it enters the battlefield tapped unless you have two or more opponents. So if you're playing two at a giant, it's just a dual land. And if you're playing multiplayer of any sort, it's just a dual land. And if you're playing single player, you know, one on one, then it's a coastal tower.
Yeah.
Is that what
it's a lackluster adventure.
Yeah. It's just a normal old, you know, enters the battlefield tapped dual land. Yeah. So yeah,
that's
like I said, they're allied colored ones, and that's just a really cool design for a set built around Two-Headed Giant, and also works for Commander and other multiplayer formats. So hey, nice!
Yeah.
But honestly, I'm good just not fooling with preview cards.
Not sure. Do you want to talk about the mechanics, or are we good?
Yeah, let's do those. There was
okay.
a mechanics
they're
article
a lot,
today as well.
Yep, and we already hit the most complicated one. So
Yeah, partner with. That's important. Assist is really neat.
Yep.
So if you cast something with assist, like Huddle Up for 2 and a blue is a sorcery that says 2 target players each draw a card, and it has assist. Assist means that any other player... Wait, no. As you cast a spell with assist, you choose another player. Oh.
Oh, that's not what it says on the card.
That's not what it says on the card. This can be your teammate or an opponent. Huh. But that player can help you by paying any amount of generic mana toward the total cost of the spell. So Huddle Up costs 2 and a blue, and your teammate can pay 2 of that, or 1 of that to help you out, or none of that and make you do it your damn self.
Respectable choice.
Yeah, so that is a really neat thing in team-centric format.
Don't be surprised if they leverage that design space to create cards that really efficiently tap for multiple mana that you can only use to, you know, assist with. Like, that's often a design thing we do with these. Or things that reduce the, or like give an extra bonus so that you only pay 1 for as many as you want. Like, that's sort of the world of fun build around me and commons. So, should be neat. Keep an eye out.
Neat. And then they're bringing back support. You remember support?
Oh, dude, it's got Gideon on it. But yeah, I do remember support.
Yeah, it was in Oath of the Gatewatch. It was one of those, draft mechanics.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it was one of those mechanics that you could use later on to make, like, your earlier drop creatures stay relevant as the game goes on.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think Expedition Raptor here is from Oath of the Gatewatch?
Probably. Looks
familiar. Also originally seen in Oath of the Gatewatch was this returning raptor. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Expedition Raptor is a 2-2 flyer for 5, but when it enters the battlefield, support 2, which means put a +1/+1 counter on each of up to 2 other target creatures.
Yeah.
And that, it doesn't say your creatures, so you can help out your teammate, which is awesome.
Yeah. You can also kill an illusion.
Which is, poor Toothy. Oh, he's not that kind of illusion, though. So
no, he's not that kind of illusion. He's different. He's like 20% a talk. He just won't admit it. He's real enough.
And then finally, there's another thing, sort of like they do in the conspiracy.
Yeah, like the old mechanics of like choose like or piece or even or odd or whatever.
Yeah. So now you've got friend or foe. When a friend or foe spell resolves, you label each player.
Man, I thought we were getting past that.
Nope, you have to keep labeling people. It says so right here.
All so right.
You have to name each player either a friend or a foe, and then it does a thing. So, like, this card is Piers Whim. For 3 and a green, it's a sorcery. For each player, choose friend or foe. Now, this means you, too.
Yeah.
Each friend searches their library for a land card, puts it on the battlefield tapped, and shuffles. Each foe sacrifices an artifact or enchantment they control. So, yeah.
And before you ask, the label of friend or foe applies only for the one spell. If you cast another friend or foe spell later in the game, you can choose friends or foes all over again. Because I really like the idea of it stacking so that someone is like your foe 4 times, but your friend once, and they just have to keep track of that. But no, that's not how it works. Unfortunately, I wanted to like triple foe someone. Like, you're still bad. But, triple, yeah, it's just for the
that's
person.
That's a kind of soup, right?
Could be.
Hmm. But, yeah. That'll be... is this coming to Magic Online, do we know?
Don't see why it couldn't.
I don't actually know.
I mean, Magic Online has... It has 2 and a giant, doesn't it?
Dude, I don't know. I don't fool with it. I'm pretty sure it...
I feel like it does. I've never done it, but...
This is our ignorance. But... Yeah, if this comes to Magic Online, it's hopefully there'll be like a default friend or foe setting. A checkbox that says, remember who's who.
Yeah.
And then it won't work, and it'll be in the bug blog, and we'll laugh at it later.
That is exactly how it works. I think it was in Magic Online. I don't think it still is.
Ah, okay.
But either way, it'll probably be there for a little bit just to run up the hype on a new set and to add cards to circulation. So we'll see. I'll let you know when I hear more on it. or you'll let me know on Twitter, because I'm sure this is listed somewhere across these 8 million articles and I just haven't seen it.
Yeah.
Because they don't post everything at once, even on announcement day.
Yeah, you remember old announcement day was just one article with like a bunch of links in it?
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, this was 4 different articles. Like, thanks, Wizards.
Do you kind of miss the Daily Magic update on days like this?
Actually, yeah. Yeah, I do.
Yeah. But at any rate, I think we've covered all the relevant announcement day announcements, right?
I mean, that was all the announcement day announcements. So.
Yeah, all that I can remember. So, again, acknowledging that these get spread out. But
yeah, if there's any of this that you want to know more about, links are in the show notes. And if you want to hear more about BattleBot, I'm fairly certain that is what the Manipool will be doing this week. Although none of the dorks have replied to the email.
Calling them out.
So, you know. We'll probably be talking about BattleBot, though. So all that's left is an article that came out earlier today. Wait, this says May 17th? Really?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So it came out Thursday. I didn't see it until you mentioned it. And it's weird because it's still listed over here as the featured article.
Yeah.
Even though
take that announcement day.
Yeah, even though we had massive announcements, this is still the featured article. Tom Wannerstrand, I don't know how you say his name. I'm very
Tom.
Sorry. You know, Tom was he's doing these articles about the actual physical product of Magic. He did one about the card coatings and whatnot.
Yeah.
Well, now he's done one about the actual cardboard cardstock. Cardboard, as it's known. And it's actually fairly interesting. I skimmed over it before we started while we were rambling about something else, and it's really neat. So, hey, links in the show notes. Go check it out.
Yeah. If you've ever wondered what these things you're paying too much money are made of, now you can find out.
Yeah, apparently, since 1993, the cardboard that they use for Magic has not changed, which is really cool. But in the Japanese market, they have 2 years ago, they started using a different cardstock for the Japanese cards, and we're all going to get to use it for Battle Bond.
So I've actually held some of those. Like my local game store had a bunch of import cards, and I pulled in I got a bunch of Japanese and a bunch of Korean and just to compare. And yeah, you can actually tell the difference slightly. Either that or because I was paying attention to it, I could. It might not be noticeable at all later, but.
Yeah, like I didn't notice a difference in the coding for Dominaria, but other people claimed they did. So I don't know.
I felt something was different, but.
Yeah. So there you go. If you are paying attention, you could probably tell the difference.
Yeah.
So, all right. That's all the other news. I guess we should talk about these two tournaments, huh?
Probably. But not a lot, because they're both weird.
Sure. So, GP Toronto happened, which was Team Trios Constructed. There were 389 teams, which was 1,167 players. And it was Team Trios, so one person playing Standard, one playing Modern, one playing Legacy.
Yep.
And since that makes any sort of meta or anything virtually impossible to tell, we're not going to go into that. We're just going to tell you who finished in the top four. So the winning team was the team of Morgan McLaughlin, Chris Harabas, let's say? Harabas? One of those. And Lucas Siao.
Congratulations.
Yay, Canada. Second place was the ridiculously OP team of Brad Nelson, Seth Manfield, and Brian Bronduin. Whoo!
Yeah, they tend to hang out in the top four of these events.
Have you noticed? Yeah.
Yeah.
Third place was Jennifer Kratz, Tyler Blum, and Robert Smith. If you're looking at the deck lists, Robert Smith's is there. It's down with the fourth place team. And one of the fourth place team's decks are missing. Fourth place, by the way, was Oliver Two, Oliver Tomachko, and Noah Walker. Poor Noah Walker just doesn't get a deck list on here.
It's because he's not an Oliver. That's what happens when you're a combo breaker.
I guess. And Robert Smith just got slid down in the fourth place.
Maybe he's actually, like, infiltrating.
I was saying, you think he's a double agent? And
I think he might be Demir, and this is actually just planning way ahead for the next set.
Ah.
Was he running blue-black? Because that would actually be pretty funny.
I think you said he was running Grix. Oh, wait.
No, Robert Smith is running
elves.
No, he's just doing recon. That's different.
Yeah, that is different.
It's like some Nettle Sentinel nonsense. Oh, no, he's being a ranger. That's what he's doing. Yeah, obviously. It still fits. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, it totally fits. It's not just that the website coverage team screwed up. Not at all.
That would never happen. This is viral.
So, yeah, there you go. That's who won. Again, the team trios, it's really, especially when they don't put a format next to each one.
Yeah.
I'm just not going to fool with it. So
they're just messy to read. If you're interested, the link is in the show notes. There's an article that goes into all of their decks, including the missing one. You can read over that.
Yeah. Was there anything interesting in the top stories? I did not even look. Let's see. The archetypes that were running the tables in day two, Black Red Vehicles had 15 decks in day two in the standard part.
Still popular.
Yep. White Black Vehicles, 7.
Vroom vroom.
And then 7 for Black Green Constrictor, rather, and 7 for Mono Red Aggro.
So 3 of the top 4 are red and 3 of the top 4 are black, right? Oh, no, only 2 of them are red. Never mind. Yeah, 3 of them are running black.
Yeah, I didn't look.
Good job.
In Modern, the Humans deck was running the board with 13 players in the top, or in day 2. Decepticons, or Affinity, with 8 players, and the rest were 3s and 2s and 13 others.
Yeah.
So a whole lot of Humans and Decepticons, and then other stuff. The others are Green White Hexproof, Jeskai Control, Kirk Clan Ironworks, Hollow One, Jund, Mardu Pyromancer, Grixis and Jund, Death Shadow, apparently one of each, and then Other.
Other.
And then in Legacy...
Wait, rewind, did you list... No, okay, sorry, I misunderstood one of the things you said.
Oh, okay. And then in Legacy, Grixis Delver had 16 in day 2. 4 Color Control had 11, including, I think, the top 2 spots. We're both playing the 4 Color Control in Legacy, I think. Lands had 6, and then the rest were 3s and 2s and Other. Elves, Mono Red Prison, Reanimator, Sultai Control, Sultai Delver, Counterbalance. Ugh. So each format has its boogeyman, but then it's hard to get much more specific than that, given the nature of the team trios.
Yeah. Given you only need 2 of your 3 formats to win each round to count as a win, you can have a lot of decks that are doing okay on strong teams, and they'll make it to the end.
Yeah. Wow. And Karn is playable in all 3 formats, so... brutal.
Sure. Seems good.
All right, so... that's Toronto. Now let's go to the SCG. Where was this? Louisville.
How you pronounce it.
Yeah, we have to point out how to pronounce it every time we go back here. You have to say it with as little enunciation as possible. Louisville.
Yeah, you pretty much have to pronounce it like your mouth is full of chewing gum.
Yes. And I'm not ragging on Louisville. This is how I was told to pronounce it by people that live there.
And I can confirm this from other people who have lived there who have told me that completely separately from how Chewie's heard it.
So. Yeah, I learned this before I met Bill.
Yeah.
Like, I was still in college doing an internship at the Jefferson Lab when a guy from Louisville showed up and someone told him, asked him, where are you from, Louisville? And he was like, dude, let me teach you all something right now.
They're very adamant about that, too. That seems to just be a trait.
So let's see here. How many people were playing Modern? 662 people in the Modern Open. And Marshall Arthurs won the whole thing with a Mardu Pyromancer deck. Yep. First to me, I didn't look at any of these
Mardu
cards.
There are no new cards.
And any of them?
Well, I mean in the Mardu Pyromancer.
Oh, well, no, not at all. In second place, we have Jonathan Hobbs running Jeskai Control. Of course, there's Teferi.
Yep.
Because why wouldn't there be?
It would be foolish not to at this point.
Yeah.
He's very good.
But other than that, I mean, it's Jeskai Control. You know what the deck is.
Mm-hmm.
In third place, Peter Tragos with a green-white hexproof deck. I apparently just hit puberty because my voice is cracking all over the place.
All it's of a cool. Sudden. We're going to Ravnica all over again. Let's go back to everything.
Yeah, but I was, what did I say, 05?
Yeah. Oh, you weren't in puberty. I'm just saying we're going back to various points in time.
Oh,
just
okay.
Ravnica is one of them. Another one is when your voice cracked in puberty.
I was like 24 when we hit Ravnica the first time.
Look, some people's voices crack late. It's okay.
It's true. Yeah. I think I had just hit puberty about then.
I mean, you're pretty early for a Wookiee.
But that's probably true. Anyway, Hexproof, you guys know the decks with the Bogles deck.
Yeah.
In fourth place, Jimmy Smith is running Jeskai Control. Very brave. There are no Teferis of any sort here.
That's true.
He does have Geist of St. Traff to just punch you, though, so, you know.
Yeah, and he's rocking Lyra Dawnbringer on the board.
Yeah, yeah. In fifth place, Dylan Hand is running the aforementioned Humans deck, yep. Which is kind of nuts.
As you would expect.
Caleb Scherer in sixth place is running the Blue-Red Gift Storm deck, but I don't think that deck really got anything from Dominaria, so we'll just move on. Oh, look at Jadeen making the top 7, or the top 8. In 7th place, Jadeen Klumparens, I've really got to learn how to say her last name, is running Jund.
Yep.
Just good old Jund. That is literally just good old Jund. Look at it.
Yeah, you really don't have to change it. Jund is very good.
And then in 8th place, Jesse Hefner is running Jund. This still one has good. 5 Lilianas, though. So, like, there's that.
Yeah.
Instead of 4. There's 5. Got that one
less. That's one darker.
That's one what?
That's one darker.
See? So there you go. That's your top 8. Looking further, there's Burn, Green White Company, Grixis Death Shadow, Elves, Hollow One, more Death Shadow, more Company, Blue Moon in 16th. In fact, let's check the metagame breakdown. Let's see. Jeskai Control, there were 16. Is this day 2? This is day 2. There were 13 humans, 11 Decepticons, 9 elves, 8 Bogles, 8 Burn, 7 Jund, 7 Mardu Pyromancer, 7 Amulet Titan, and then from there it drops off.
Yeah.
But it drops off for like a long time. Instead of having a giant other pile, they actually listed what all of these are. Wow. That's a lot. Yeah.
Variety.
Red Green Hollow Vine. What?
Sounds like a Mad Lib. Did Brian do this?
Oh, they finished 31st. Sweet, I get to look at it. And it's Richard Nixon III. Hopefully no relation.
I'm sure he's never heard that in his life.
Probably not, but I've never said it, so that counts. It is. It's Hollow One with Vengevine. That's what I thought it would be. Oh my god.
That's pretty good.
It's got the Reckless Bushwhacker. You remember that guy?
Yes.
Hooting and Mandrills? Ooh, damn. That is a trip. Vengevine. I miss that card. All right, so there you go. That was the Modern Open.
Yep.
The Modern Classic had 155 people playing, and Michael Coyle won with a Blue-Red Prison deck. Blue-Red Prison. That's Tezzeret the Seeker.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
The red is a generous thing to say about it.
This is a Tezzeret deck.
Yes.
Whir of Invention? Whoa.
This is very much a Tezzeret deck. I think the red is literally Pyrite Spellbomb.
Oh, there's a Gyarapur Aether Grid in the board.
Ah, missed that. Okay, then sure. Get there.
Wow.
Yeah, this deck needs a better name.
It does, but I mean, it is still, yeah, I'm pretty sure it's still a prison deck, but...
Oh, it's totally a prison deck. It just feels like we need to have some kind of other thing, like, you know, this is a Tezzeret, so this should be like, you know, airport metal detector deck. That's a stupid name. Keep talking.
Oh, it doesn't have Ensoul Artifact. Boo!
Oh, does it not have scissors?
Give us more scissors.
That is a shame.
All right.
They don't even...
What?
Yeah, I don't know. It just feels like the red part is like K, technically. But
yeah.
Someone come up with a better name for this. I know it's not Legacy, but give it a funny name anyway. tell Clues what it is, because he's not here to defend himself.
Scissorless scissors. okay.
Rock beat scissors.
In second place, Connor Sloan is running a mono green Tron deck. Oh, I knew it. I was going to say, they're playing Death Star Karn, but nope, there's the Scion in the board. Two of them. Look at him.
Just waiting. Put me in, coach.
In third place, Nicholas Johnson is running Decepticons. Also with Karn.
Yeah. Decepticon.
Nice. Drew Jeffries? I'm going to assume that's supposed to be Andrew.
Probably a fair assumption.
Oh, maybe not. It says Drew on both pages.
I suspect that is a generated field.
That could be. Either way, he's running Ad Nauseam.
You should stop.
Wait, this is modern.
Oh. Yeah.
Oh, this is the Lightning Storm Lab Maniac Angel's Grace. Okay, yeah, Phyrexian Unlife. This deck. Got it.
It's a modern deck, but it kind of feels like a legacy deck.
Yeah. In fifth place, Harold Coleman is running a green-red Tron deck.
Gertron.
In sixth place, Ryan Ferries is running Burn. Yay, fire. James Manges in seventh is running a mono-green Tron. And there's a black-red Hollow One rounding out the top eight by Connor Mullally. Good old Hollow One. Looking past that, Mardu Pyromancer, more Decepticons, Humans, Black-White Control. What is this? Gideon Jura, Gideon of the Trials, Gideon Ally of Zendikar, Obnixilus Reignited, and Sorin Lord of Innistrad. What?
That's a different party.
Ain't no party like a Gideon party, because a Gideon party don't stop, because you're running Gideon of the Trials.
Because you're driving two cars at once.
Except there aren't any cars. I'm so confused.
Oh, why would you do that? Oh, maybe it's because the party had to stop because he crashed all the cars.
It could be.
But yeah, that's a lot of Gideon.
And the rest of it is just removal. Look at this. Cast Down, Fatal Push, Path to Exile, Bantu's Last Reckoning, Collective Brutality, Damnation, Day of Judgment, and then Inquisition of Kozilek, Thought Seize, Wrath of God, and Lingering Souls. This is blow up everything and beat him to death with Gideon.
I mean, I respect that.
That's hilarious. And there's a Sorin Grim Nemesis and an Elspeth Tyrell. How do you say her last name?
I always pronounce it Tyrell, but probably also Game of Thrones creeping in.
That could be. But there's all of that in the board. Oh, and Damping Sphere, because sometimes you just need Damping Sphere. Wow. This deck looks hilarious.
So, the way that Legendary rules work now, you can have two different Gideons on the field at once, right?
Correct.
So, this kind of deck wouldn't have worked as well before.
Correct.
So, we're finally seeing the results of that in practice. You can just sort of have your three Gideons out. That's disgusting. It's like, everybody attack this Gideon. Other Gideons attack.
Yeah, and it's weird, like, you can have a 6-6 Gideon, a 4-4 Gideon, and a 5-5 Gideon just swinging for the fences. Oh.
This deck feels like it needs to have that thing that prevents you from losing the game as long as you have a Gideon. Oh, wait, it does.
I was going to say, yeah, it does.
It's got three of them. This is stupid.
Like I said, ain't no party like a Gideon party because you're playing Gideon in the Trials.
Yeah.
All right.
At a Gideon party, like, would the trials be like party games? Like, is Gideon digging out Twister or something? Or, like, what exactly would the trials be? And, like, how would Sorin and Obnixilus handle that?
Maybe they're like the straight men. They're like, Gideon's stop. Oh my god, the Gideons are like the Warners.
I'm Gideon, and I'm cute. Shut up, Gideon.
Anyway, going back to the modern classic, amazing. There's a Jeskai Control. There's after the Black-White Control in 12th. Go look at that deck, y'all. It's great. There's Jeskai Control, Jund, Merfolk, and another Jeskai Control. So, then we go to Standard. Okay, I was like, wait, I'm forgetting something.
Yeah, I can't do Modern anymore. It's just one giant Gideon frat party in my head.
Yeah, it's like it's not even funny anymore. So
no, it's just like, hey, bro, what you want to do? He's like, I'm Kool-Aid.
Let's go. Oh, yeah. So let's go to the Standard Classic where 112 people were playing. Ben Weinberg, one of those, won with a blue-white control deck, which makes sense.
Yep.
Mono-red aggro in second by Alex Hahn. Yeah, that's mono-red aggro. Blue-white control in third by Little Help.
Donanon
Madassian?
Dananon? I don't know.
Madassian? Donanon Madassian?
Don Mad.
Playing blue-white control, yeah. In fourth place is a blue-white gift. Godfarer's Gift by Andy Logan. And it's playing Fairgrounds Warden. And every time I see that card, I'm like, what does that do again? Neat. Fifth place, Brendan Hicks has a mono-green aggro that we've seen. Sixth place is a white-black aggro by Robert Meadows. There's Karn. I've been wondering when he would show up.
Oh, he's been in the sideboards of a lot of these decks.
Ah, okay. In seventh place, Benjamin Smith is running a blue-black improvised deck. Really?
Huh.
Okay, we've got Merchant's Dockhand.
This is amazing.
Herald of Anguish. Good old Herald. Karn, Tezzeret the Schemer. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And then a bunch of things, the small artifacts that do things. And the Antiquities War. Battle at the Bridge. Oh, man. Neat. Fairly certain my head hurts now. There's a Contraband Kingpin in the board. Oh, my God. Not even messing around.
No. The Inventor's fair because it does a lot in this deck.
Yes. Yes, it does.
I think you're going to have three more artifacts.
Probably.
I want to believe.
And then in eighth place, Jeremy Zimmer is running the red-black aggro deck that, you know, we all know and love. Or at least know. So there you go. The rest of the top 16. Another red-black aggro, blue-white control, white-black aggro, red-black mid-range. Okay, what's this? This is the one that's running the Ballista and the Siphoner and Glorybringer.
No.
Also Aethersphere Harvester. What? Okay, fine. Mono-red aggro, white-black aggro, there's a green-black constrictor, and a blue-white approach. Huh. Gotta watch out for that second sun. So that's your standard classic.
Now you're out of classics.
Yeah, that might be it. That is it, actually. Just one more, I think one more reminder. When is this? 2 days to go. Yep. If you wanted to get the pride-colored Planeswalker symbol or D&D symbol, you've got 2 days from right now. So probably one more day from the time you're hearing this, hopefully, to pick them up. Supporting the Lambert House. Links are in the show notes again. So it's a fundraiser. Go get it. Yes. So anything neat going on in Magic Online this week?
We've got some fun bug blog stuff.
Oh, yeah?
So I can add a link to that, the notes. I missed that earlier when I was skimming. But yeah, so bug blog. Here's the most entertaining one for me. Resolving a scry effect with an empty library will prevent the game from continuing. So if you manage to get down to the end of your library, this is your way out if you're a cheater. Don't do that.
Wait, how would... Oh, there's no thing there for it to you to choose top or bottom.
Choose, so it just freezes.
Whoops.
Yeah, that's a problem. Not actually sure why that's a new problem, but here we are. It might also just be something that had not come up. But yeah, that's something to be aware of. If you find your opponent doing it on purpose, report them, all the normal stuff. Other noteworthy things, Leovold Emissary of Trust incorrectly allows an opponent to choose yes with Sylvan Library, but correctly doesn't allow them to draw extra cards. That's a weird combination of stuff.
Huh. Right. Well, since,
let me add this so you can see it.
Since Leovold is a legacy thing, that's messed up.
Yeah. There you go.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's just weird. This one's also fun. Magus of the Arena does not cause the two creatures to fight. Think about
two men enter. then look at each other.
Two men enter, two men seem confused. So what it does with that missing is three, tap. Tap target creature you control and target creature an opponent's choice he or she controls, or they control now. Those creatures fight each other, but now it's tap your guy, and they tap one of their guys. Good talk.
Good talk.
That's great.
Huh. Who runs Arena Town? I don't know.
Nobody. I don't know, man. Maybe it's like Magic Arena and you need to get a key to get in. I have no idea. But there's that.
It's an anarcho-syndicalist commune.
Wow. That's great.
Anyway, sorry.
No, that was a good one. It was worth it. All right, so Mirren Crusader doesn't visually represent when it's given protection from colors other than black and green. So it already comes with protection from black and green. Give it pro blue, it's like, I am not going to show you.
I'm assuming if you mouse over it, it'll still tell you that, but it's just not on the card.
Presumably. Like, it still has it, which is the important part, but be aware when your opponent has it to actually pay attention to what's going on before you mess that up. If Karn Liberated restarts the game, its controller draws a card on their first turn. Well, that's nice.
Oh, hey, thanks. Bonus.
like you're not already breaking the game enough.
Yeah, right?
This is like Karn the Death Star also comes with a free, like, TIE Liberator. Just because. Why not? Good job, Karn. He's like, I'm still good. It's like, we never doubted you, big guy.
Just because your future self is getting some, more attention doesn't mean that you're any less important.
You're still seeing play, buddy. It's still Urza-Tron you out like nobody's business. It's all good. And finally, Valduke, or Valduk, depending, Keeper of the Flame, does not create an elemental token if it dies while its ability is on the stack. So that's sad.
Huh. That is sad.
It's like, oh no, he's putting one. Never mind. Yeah, that's just wrong. So anyway, these are bugs. Be aware of them. If you're playing these cards, you should try to avoid causing these scenarios. If your opponents are playing these cards and exploiting them, then they're cheating and shame on them. So you should report them because that is not okay.
Oh, Doubling Seasons incorrect thing is still there.
Forever.
That's sad.
At this point, it's a tradition.
I guess.
But yeah. Let's see, the only other thing in Magic Online is that they're going to be doing a cube that's all uncommons.
Oh yeah, they're doing like cube spotlights or something.
Yeah.
Something.
Yeah. So I'm not going to go over what is in an uncommon cube, but be aware that it exists. And here's a link in the show notes if you want to see it.
It's cards that are uncommon.
Yeah. Big surprise. So things to consider in an uncommon cube. Lower power level. Also, probably not going to have as much busted rare land, given there are none. But yeah, there's a link in the show notes to an article about it with a whole bunch of the actual cards in the list if you want to see those.
Let's see here. The Cube Spotlight Series. A few times this year, we'll put a new cube up for a single week. And there'll be a little more unusual than the standard fare. They'll be offbeat and experimental, blah, blah, blah. So yeah, the first one they're doing is the Uncommon Cube.
Yep.
Which is neat. And, I mean, I love the way that a cube used to be... Like, when Cube first started being a thing, people thought that a cube was all the most powerful cards in Magic thrown in and then you draft from it. And
yeah.
It took a little while for it to sink in to some people that a cube is just a set of cards that you have created for drafting.
Yeah, it's an abnormally large library of cards that you use to make your own draft format.
Yeah.
The only real stipulations are that it's singleton, and presumably these cards go well enough together that it's not a miserable experience for all.
Unless you're building a miserable experience cube, which I'm sure someone out there has. Like, everything in this sucks, let's play it.
I think a miserable experience cube involves throwing boots in a room and seeing what happens.
Aw.
Good time. But yeah, past that, if you're listening to this on Tuesday, there's a day left in the Lorwyn Flashback Cube, draft.
Yeah.
Now, Lorwyn Flashback Cube would be an awkward experience, but the Flashback Draft has still got another day left. If you haven't checked it out and you want to, go do that. It's going to go away soon.
Yeah, it
is. Specifically, he goes away on Wednesday, the 23rd. So, hooray.
All right. So that is it for this Monday Night Magic. What you got, Bill? Where are you from? Where can people find you? All that good stuff.
Well, I'm not from Louisville, so that's for sure. But, yeah, you can find me on Twitter at SqueeGoblinToBob. There's no I in Goblin because I think it was bumped out of the pack by a printing error resulting from Partner With. Very sad. It'll be around somewhere.
I wonder if it's at the Gideon party.
Oh, dude, if it is, I'm going to feel bad later when it gets back and has seen things. It's going to get here and it's going to be like, yeah, those Gideons just play Cards Against Humanity all the time. And I'm like, that's unfortunate. But speaking of humanity and shame, I'm going to be at an anime convention next weekend. This actual weekend. And a few days from now, I'm going to be at Animazement in Raleigh, North Carolina. I've been going to this convention for 2 decades because I am old and nerd. And I'm going to have fun. So if you're going, let me know on Twitter and maybe we can see each other. It'll be fun. I'm going to dress up like a loser. I will not be posting pictures on Twitter because I don't really do that. But it'll be happening. It'll be silly. Hopefully fun will be had. Next week, I will potentially not have a voice per tradition from conventions. We'll see what happens on Monday. Next week is also Memorial Day, so yay. Holidays in America.
It's feasible that we will not record until Tuesday next week. I forgot that next week was Memorial Day. I have no idea what you guys... I know you don't have anything going on Monday night by design.
Yeah.
But I don't know about myself and Clues. I got family coming in. I don't know. So we will let you guys know on Twitter.
Yeah.
If we're doing Monday or Tuesday next week.
Correct. Past that, I will note that I have seen Deadpool 2 and I enjoyed it.
Hey, me too.
I will not spoil anything, but I enjoyed it.
I was also on the School of Movies podcast about Deadpool 2.
Which will come out someday.
Is that what he said?
I have no idea.
Oh, did you say someday?
I said someday, yes.
Oh, okay, because it's not like you said, which will come out Sunday. I'm like, I don't think that's right.
No, that's probably quite wrong. Like, I would someday, because I'm used to, they post these things long enough later that when I listen to them, I forgot what I said.
Oh, no, I think for these, for brand new movies, he tends to get them out fairly quickly.
Oh, okay, well then, pay attention to that. Chewie will probably retweet it when it's posted.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun. They were harder on some aspects of the film than I was. Like, literally everyone else was harder on some aspects of the film than I was. But I also am not on a film critiquing podcast either, so.
Yeah. I follow different rules when I'm evaluating movies that I don't feel are striving to be artistic, so to speak. Also, Deadpool is Deadpool, and I rate it as to how well it feels as a Deadpool movie. So.
Yeah, it was also a sequel from Fox.
It's true.
So, you know, disappointment was bound to come for somebody.
Yeah. Let's also note that it's technically an X-Men movie. Technically. And those have been known to disappoint.
All right.
But that's my stuff. I'll hand it over to Clues. Clues is not here. I'll hand it over to Chewie.
Bye, Clues. Oh, wait, no. Clues isn't here. So, yeah, you can find me all over the internet at the Manipool. That's Twitter, Facebook, freaking Instagram, YouTube, Twitch, just everywhere. Just everywhere. We're streaming Overwatch Tuesday night because the anniversary event starts, and damn it, we want to play. So that's what we'll be doing Tuesday over on twitch.tv/themanipool. You should come hang out.
Lucio Ball!
If that's one of the first ones, we don't know. They're going to rotate the old arcade modes daily. So that'll be fun. We get to check out like Lucio Ball and Maze Snowball Fight. Hopefully not that one. And the Halloween thing. It's going to be neat.
Yeah, if you get more shots at the various archive events too. So lots of stuff.
Yeah, hell yeah. So yeah, that'll be at the very least me and Bill and Steph. Probably Haley, possibly Cap. Like we're all going to be playing. It's going to be great. So yay! And then I got nothing. I guess I should do the Patreon thing. So if you want to help support what I do with the 2 podcasts a week and all of the YouTube and Twitch and all of that, then by all means, check out the Patreon at patreon.com/themanapool, where you can get Manapool episodes and YouTube videos early, including the TMP nerf report that Mike and I just did about the nerfs that also happen tomorrow in Hearthstone. We explained what all the nerfs are and how they'll work and how they will affect each deck that they apply to. Because you guys remember when Standard sucked in Magic a little while back and they had to start banning things? Yep, Standard sucks in Hearthstone, so they're swinging the nerf hammer wide. So, Mike and I explained all that. I also told a story about getting stranded on the side of the road doing my driving job. That will go public sometime tomorrow. So, that's over on youtube.com/themanapool, but you could have gotten those early. See? You can also get the early stuff and the odds and ends, all the stuff recorded before and after both Monday Night Magic and the Manapool, which are uncensored and unfiltered, and it's just us being nonsensical. We're either planning out the episode, or talking about all the nerdy stuff we've done, or swearing at each other, or all of the above. Just whatever. And if you want, you can get the odds and ends, the early stuff, and become a Manapool lifeguard, and get the shout out on both podcasts and on the end slate for all the videos that go up each month you support at that tier. And so to that end, I would like to thank the following exceedingly generous individuals, the lifeguards: Kim Ho, Andrew Hunt, Al, Corey Clotier, Paul David, Lance Delicious, Team You, Helles Har You. I really hope I'm still saying that right. John Morris, Stuart Slaw, PJ McMullen, Bosco Bertain, Casey, Nathan Hay, Danny Liao, Jason Doan, AJ Heavieris, Cody Buckowing, Jake Jansons, Jason Kaus, Brian DeLucci, Stark Maximum, John Parker, Jimmy Scott, Violet Moon, Dan Holm, Bartle, Mike Millerburn, and the Beastfather, Aaron Goodwine. Seriously, though, thank you all so very much. I quite literally could not do it without you. And with that, yeah, you know what? I'm going to give a shout-out also to Alex Newman, who has been, for a very long time, supporting at an amount that would be on that tier. But I've asked, hey man, don't you want your name on that? He's like, nope. But you know what? You get one. Ha! So thank you, sir, for your support without wanting the glory? I don't know. I don't get it. But I really do appreciate it. Hopefully this doesn't make him pull his support. So let's see. Is there anything else there, Mr. Squee?
I think you covered all the highlights.
Nice. Well, there ain't no party like an M&M party, because an M&M party stops.